Hey everybody, welcome to Sweater Weather, a podcast about Canadian arts and culture. I'm Aaron Giovannone, a writer and a professor.
And I'm Naomi Lewis, otherwise known as Naomi K. Lewis, a writer and editor.
Oh, you threw the K in today.
Yeah, I don't know. A little something different.
What does the K stand for?
It stands for cockamamie.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm enjoying Montreal quite a bit.
Me too.
People have been known to like this city.
They have been. Yeah. They like it a lot, and we like it a lot. We like the cheese. We like the bread. We like the walks. We like the talks. We like the wines. We like the people. We like the parks. We like the stores. We like...
How do you like Le Français?
A
little harder to deal
it's
with.
It's a little harder, even though I allegedly learned French as a child. I understand when people speak mostly, which is quite nice, but yeah. I'm rendered mute when it is my turn to speak.
I like the challenge. It forces me to use my French.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
You like a challenge. I don't like a challenge. I prefer things to just be easy breezy.
The subject of our show today is a fun one, I think. We're talking about The Rehearsal, a 6-part comedy on HBO, created by, starring, directed by Canadian comedian Nathan Fielder.
Nathan Fielder.
Now, what kind of show is The Rehearsal, just in case people out there haven't seen it? Well, I'd call it a comedy reality show. So the star, Nathan Fielder, he's interacting with real people, non-actors, right?
Mm-hmm.
In order to get them to do funny, revealing, embarrassing, sometimes profound things on camera. So it's kind of like Sacha Baron Cohen's various projects, like Borat, and probably a more distant cousin of prank shows, mm-hmm. like Punk'd with Ashton Kutcher, or Johnny Knoxville's Jackass series. And of course, the originator really of all of these shows, at least in the modern era, is probably Tom Green.
Yeah.
Future episode of Sweater Weather.
Yeah, I think he is kind of the originator.
So,
although Nathan Fielder is doing something, and each of those people are doing something very different from the others,
mm-hmm.
but it is all of a kind in a way.
Yeah.
Nathan Fielder is kind of like doing reality TV, like you said, comedy reality TV, but it's also like meta reality. Meta reality TV.
Very much a kind of parody of reality TV in some ways.
Yeah, but I think even more than a parody, like, he builds these layers where you become completely baffled about what's real and what isn't. Maybe none of it's real. Maybe parts of it are and parts of it are not. And
mm-hmm.
and although, like, we already know that reality TV is largely staged, and sometimes
the hand of the producers weighs very heavily on what you see in reality.
Yeah, I mean, not just through editing, but through actually telling the people to do certain things, because it's more compelling for the audience, and people play up their persona, because if they do that, if people act silly and crazy, like, they have a better chance of being on camera and making it to the final cut and stuff like that. So and so The Rehearsal really plays on all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And we're left questioning not just what's real and what isn't on TV, but, like, kind of what's real and what isn't in real life. And then also, when you're watching reality TV, or, you know, Tom Green or those other shows, none of which I've seen, but I can imagine, you find yourself asking, is this right? Is this ethical? Is this fair? And this show kind of goes meta on that as well.
That's right.
Not kind of, it absolutely does.
Yeah, so the concept is this. And this is the source of the name of the show, The Rehearsal. Participants volunteer to participate in the show because they want to solve a problem
mm-hmm.
in their real lives. So Nathan Fielder proposes to them that they will rehearse the scenarios before they have to actually do it in real life. So Fielder, he mentions that this rehearsal technique is something that he learned
mm-hmm.
while working on his previous reality comedy show, called Nathan For You, which we'll get into a little bit later, you know, where he would try to get people to do certain things, and he'd have to rehearse the sorts of things that he would say to them or do around them to try to provoke certain kinds of responses. He doesn't go into that much detail describing it in the show, in the rehearsal, but he does mention at the beginning that this is something he's had to learn to do in his work.
Right.
He says in the opening narration to the rehearsal in the first episode of the show, quote, "I wanted to show that if you plan for every variable, a happy outcome doesn't have to be left to chance." Mm-hmm. So that's the concept of the show.
Yeah, yeah.
So much of the show is Fielder going to absurd lengths to stage these rehearsals in incredible detail. And Fielder gets himself kind of drawn into the participants' lives along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He becomes kind of the one who we're watching. He becomes the guinea pig of the show, or the kind of butt of the joke, as well as the the specimen that's being studied in the science experiment as the show goes on.
That's right. I think people who want to defend the show on ethical grounds and say he's not just making fun of people. Sometimes people seem silly. Mm-hmm. And of course, this is a comedy show, so he's trying to make people laugh, make people mm-hmm. in the audience laugh. But the joke is also often on him, and that's true in this show too. Like he's drawn into the experiments himself. He's the one often being laughed at or making fun of himself, and you can tell he sets himself up to be for these jokes like very clearly. If rewatching the show, I noticed many times that he was doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, I mean, the other people are not in control. He's staging the whole thing. He's has control over the editing.
Yeah.
He's creating a persona that he's playing in this show, and he's totally in control of that persona.
Indeed.
And how it comes across. And it kind of reminds me, in a way, I mean, when we first watched the first episode of this together, I'd never seen Nathan For You. I think you'd seen a bit of it, but I was really taken aback and disturbed by the first episode of the show, and I felt like it was mean, and it was... I did feel like I didn't really understand. And now, I mean, of course, you realize that you're not supposed to understand. You're supposed to be confused at first. But, like, is this whole thing actors? Is this whole thing real? How much of this is really happening? Like, is he serious when he says that he built a replica of this guy's apartment and then, pre-enacted mm-hmm. their meeting so that he would be ready for any contingency in their conversation?
Yeah.
And you never, of course, you never know how much of that is real and how much of it is staged. But, I mean, it's funny when I think back now that I was so disturbed by it, because I am a writer of nonfiction and I've written a memoir, and that's not so different, right, in certain ways. And I know, like...
It's not really, no.
Yeah, and I definitely have had people... I have a close friend who feels that, believes that... writing the kind of memoir I wrote is unethical, which is kind of like writing any memoir, really, in that I exposed people in ways that they hadn't agreed to, and in particular people close to me. But really, it could be anybody, right? I mean, the point being that these other people don't have control over how they're being presented at all.
They don't.
And
no.
I have complete control over the narrative. I mean, to the extent that I'm aware of what I'm doing and I'm in control of the craft, right? But I'm able to present. So even though I say about my memoir, I can say, well, I don't make myself look that great either. Like, yeah. I don't make myself look better than the other people in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone just comes across as human and flawed and lovable, and all the ways that humans are flawed and lovable. And I can also say, but I explicitly say that this is my project, and it's through the lens of my subjectivity. But at the same time, it's also true that I am in control of it and those people aren't. And the persona that I chose to portray in that book, like, it's not 100% me or 100% of me, and it is a flawed character that I present, and like a character that you can laugh with and at, but it's also a character that I chose to portray exactly the way that it's portrayed.
Yeah.
And the other people that I portray in that book did not have any control over that, even if I'm quoting them directly, describing exactly what happened. Like, I'm choosing what to put in, what not to put in. I'm choosing
yeah.
the context. I'm choosing the tone.
Yeah.
And so it's quite hypocritical of me to criticize. And also because I do often lean into humor in my writing in a way that could be, that I could be accused of making the reader laugh at the characters. And so I just find it funny that when I reflect back on myself, that I'm so disturbed by Nathan Fielder doing this, when it's exactly the kind of thing, really, that I would do.
Well, I mean, there are different things that come into play when it's a different medium. And when
yes.
someone's being shown on camera, too.
Sure.
And you change people's names often or whatever. I mean, that's just something
yeah.
that you do out of consideration. So there are big differences.
There are big differences. And also Nathan Fielder's audience is much bigger.
That's
so these people become like instant celebrities and they haven't chosen exactly how they're being portrayed, presumably.
Right.
And also some of them are children, which is another topic that we can talk about.
So my like I came into the show not so dismayed by the first, like shocked by it, because I've seen Nathan Fielder's work before. So he had a show some years ago from 2013 to 2017. It was on Comedy Central. It was called Nathan for You. I liked that show a lot. I watched the first season or two. Now, after that, I did stop watching, partly because just I had moved and I didn't have access to Comedy Central for a while. But I also didn't seek it out again afterwards. And I stopped watching partly because I felt bad at times watching it.
Mm.
Now, Nathan for You was a parody of a reality show. It parodied the kind of reality show where the production goes to save a failing business.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot like Gordon Ramsay's Kitchen Nightmares.
Oh, yeah.
And Nathan for You, you know, Fielder would ask a small business, essentially, if they wanted to participate in a TV show that would help them promote their business. And, you know, lots of businesses are going to say yes to mm-hmm. that, right? Especially a struggling business. They're going to agree to free publicity on the show. So, of course, as you can imagine, he gets them to do silly things. So, for example, this is, I think, the first episode of the series. He managed to convince the owner of an ice cream shop to offer a poo-flavored ice cream. See, now, that one is like, well, maybe that's not a great idea for your ice cream shop.
Why? Like, what's the idea behind this?
Get publicity.
Oh, okay,
No press is bad press. I mean, that is behind all of these schemes. That is ultimately what you land on as a justification.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was an episode.
And did it work?
He did it.
And did they get business?
I don't recall.
Okay.
Now, something that did work, though, an episode about a petting zoo that was trying to promote itself. So this one's kind of cute. Fielder's faked a social media video where a baby pig from the petting zoo jumped into the water to save a drowning baby goat.
A baby goat?
And this was like, it was elaborately staged they show, of course, the making of the video, and it was elaborately staged with like scuba divers under the water, carrying the pig and stuff. It's really, really funny. And that one did work. That video went viral, and it was on the news as well.
Wow, okay.
He got a struggling diner owner to stage an event, again, for the news that would attract attention to the diner. So their idea was that a celebrity impersonator was going to leave a $10,000 tip, and that could be a story that the news would pick up. So
okay.
It goes into... With this stunt, as with all the others, a big appeal of Nathan for You, and this is amped up 100 times maybe in the rehearsal, is the absurd complexity of the plans.
Yes.
To get this thing, this plan to happen.
Right.
So, for example, with this diner owner, they were like, okay, well, we need a celebrity impersonator to come into the diner. And so there's of course funny scenes where he's interviewing celebrity impersonators, and there's like a very bad Jim Carrey impersonator. And there's a very bad Kramer impersonator.
Really?
Yeah. And so the diner owner chooses the Kramer impersonator. This is after the whole problem with Michael Richards, the controversy of him using the N-word in a comedy skit or whatever. So anyway, he's like, well, you know, there's been some controversy about Michael Richards, and the diner owner's like, He's like an old guy. He's kind of out of touch.
Yeah. He?
And then they need to get, so this is an example of how complex it gets. They have to go, he thinks that he needs to go find somebody named Michael Richards so he can borrow his credit card to use it for the receipt. Because on the news, there's always a picture of the receipt.
Okay,
So he decided the receipt needed to be legitimate.
Yeah.
And have a real Michael Richards pay for
okay.
it. And so he goes to try to find a Michael Richards who will let them use his credit card.
Very Nathan Fielder.
It will not work, so he has to go and find someone who's willing to change their name to Michael Richards and then get a credit card. And of course, who's willing to do that? Like some very sketchy kind of like guy with a criminal history.
Okay.
And there's this funny exchange where like Nathan feels like, you're not going to run away with the money that we're putting in the account, are you? And he's like, no, I won't. So he handcuffs himself to this man for the entire day so that he can't run away.
Oh my gosh.
So
does he get to change his name back? I'm worried about this guy.
Yeah, I know. They don't show that. Right. So that worked, by the way, too. They got a spot on the news because of the $10,000 tip that Michael Richards left. Actually, Nathan Few first came into, I think, popular. It kind of burst out of its bubble as being like a kind of a niche comedy show that comedy nerds liked in its second season when he did an episode called Dumb Starbucks. Okay. And so it begins with Nathan Fielder trying to get a cafe owner it's a struggling cafe. And he says, you know, you don't really have a strong brand for your cafe. So the best brand in the game is Starbucks. What we're going to do is you're going to use the Starbucks branding. And you're going to protect yourself using parody law. So you're going to pretend like this is all just a joke.
Okay.
The idea is everything is going to be Dumb Starbucks. They're going to call the show, they call the cafe Dumb Starbucks, and everything's going to be like Dumb Venti Latte or something. And so the cafe owner, he goes along for a while and then he jumps ship. But Nathan goes ahead with the idea and opens his own cafe called Dumb Starbucks.
Yeah.
And it actually works, and it becomes a viral sensation, and it does make international headlines.
Oh, wow.
And there were lineups around the corner to go to Dumb Starbucks. And they had to shut it down because Starbucks was going to sue them. Which is what the original cafe owner was worried about.
Right.
Anyway, these are all very good, and they were very, like, a lot of these actually worked as publicity stunts, and they're very funny. Like, at times, though, like, I do think this show, Nathan For You, it strayed into being rather mean. Like, sometimes he would be, because he's just trying to get people to react and do something funny. His typical behavior is interesting. It's, like, completely deadpan.
Yeah.
Extremely low energy, non-threatening, kind of nerdy, awkward vibe.
Yeah.
And that really works because it brings people out of their shells. And he's often finding very strange, if not outrageous, personality types who feel comfortable around him to just sort of say and do things that can be pretty weird or very entertaining. But sometimes he would sometimes try, like, depending on what kind of a person he was dealing with, he would be mean.
Mm-hmm.
He would sometimes be mean. So I remember one time, one episode, it was about a horse. It was a horse ranch. It was a rancher. What he did for her was, he knew that, like, so large people could not ride horses. If you're over 220 pounds, you can't ride a horse.
Okay.
Generally, because it may hurt the horse. So what he did is he figured out a way that if he attached these huge weather balloons to people, it would lighten their load so that a larger person could go on a horse ride. So he did this.
Okay.
With a volunteer. And at the end, he says to the ranch owner, well, aren't you, like, this is the first time that a plus-size person has really ever ridden a horse safely. Like, this is, you're going to enter the history books for this. And she said, well, I hope I'm not known for this. She's like, I hope I'm known for my horses or maybe my dogs or for being a nice person. And he said, no offense, but you won't be known for any of those things. You'll be known for this and only this. Anyway, that was like an example of him being rude or whatever, but, like, actually in many cases, like, sometimes you feel like he's dealing with desperate people or maybe mentally ill people.
Yeah.
Although he's never frames it like that, you kind of get the sense that he may be doing that. And and depending on how he treats them, it works or it doesn't. Like, you can do it, but it all depends, I think, artistically on your tone. And so sometimes the tone would turn into just be mean. It would be too mean, it'd be too mocking. This is also a show from 10 years ago, you know, almost 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So comedy was different then, but, like, this is one that is, like, an extremely problematic episode. So there is an episode where Nathan and his father, his real life father, they like to wear a certain jacket.
Okay.
It was a soft shell hiking jacket from a Vancouver based outdoor clothing store called Taiga, and it was actually founded by a German immigrant. So, but strangely, this company was embroiled in a controversy when they published a spring catalog that for some reason featured a famous Holocaust denier in
it.
Yeah. So then Nathan and his dad, who are Jewish, they could not wear the jacket anymore. And so this is presented on the show as a problem because they really like the jacket, but they're not allowed to wear it anymore. Mm-hmm. So Nathan starts his own clothing company. He calls it Summit Ice, and he designed a nice looking jacket. And he said all proceeds would go to Holocaust education. And actually this became a real business, and he sold a bunch, and he made, apparently made like $500,000 or something selling these jackets. But then to promote his jacket, he makes it into another segment on his show. He collaborates with a rabbi, a very strange rabbi, I would say, who suggests that to promote this jacket, that he set up a display in a clothing store that features swastikas, pictures of dead bodies, and even has a model of an oven with bones in it.
What?
To show as part of Holocaust education.
Oh.
So, the clothing store owner was extremely mad when he saw this. And, you know, that seemed like kind of in poor taste. It seemed kind of exploitative. But, I mean...
But wait a minute. Exploitative of this weird rabbi? Or of, like, people who died in the Holocaust?
I mean, certainly just... Okay, let's just say that... Okay, it seems to me in many ways that goes too far.
Yeah.
It wasn't funny. It was just very uncomfortable.
It doesn't sound funny at all.
But it was very uncomfortable, and this is another emotion that many of his stunts could provoke.
Yeah.
And for me, it also seemed mean to his participants because he's actually putting their stores like at risk.
Yeah,
in
that's
a way.
Right.
So, you know, to me, sometimes the tone would not work. And also, as a formula, as a concept, it was kind of limited. Like, I would get fatigued watching the show. I would start to find it kind of boring.
Mm.
The individual gags would be very funny. He's very funny. But as a formula, it's impossible to have a through line in a show like this because mm-hmm. it's just segment to segment. You're always moving on to a new business and new participants. So you don't ever get character development. You don't get a long story arc. And so it ends up being something that's hard to watch mm-hmm. after a certain amount of time. And that was just me, because the show, over its four seasons on Comedy Central, it grew every year in viewership. Sometimes it would be number one in its for young men, the young men demographic, in its time slot. So it was a hit. Comedy Central wanted Nathan Fielder to do more of it, but he actually decided to stop. So what we see a few years later now with his new show, The Rehearsal, is him going back to some of the things from Nathan For You mm-hmm. that, like many of these tricks and techniques that he developed, but also trying to find a longer form, right? To develop a story arc.
Yes.
To get more into various characters who are people who appear on the show.
Yeah, a story arc that goes through the whole season, not just one episode.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also using himself, I think, even more as one of these characters right. that may be able to provide a through line through the show where you see Nathan's developing consciousness or, you know,
emotional development.
Right, right. Yeah. So Nathan Fielder is Canadian. He was born in Vancouver in 1983. Both his parents are social workers. He was educated at a private Jewish elementary school. Then he went to a public high school. At 13, he got into magic. He joined the Vancouver Magic Circle. He worked at a magic shop at the mall. And he performed at kids' birthday parties.
Oh, that is so apt.
And you see him every now and then pull out a magic trick in the show as well.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he'll just do it. He'll just do it for fun.
The whole show is a magic trick, though. It's all sleight of hand. It's all making you look one way and something else happening somewhere else. And you don't know what's real. You don't know what's not. You suspect that nothing is, but the illusion is perfect. So, yeah, it's kind of perfect that he was into magic. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think when you're watching a magician, you are amazed by the performance,
mm-hmm.
right? And so the rehearsal is really something that brings attention to the performance.
Absolutely.
Like the all of the machinations to put together the show, and Nathan constantly thinking up a new angle and a new trick.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's part of the pleasure of watching the rehearsal.
Absolutely.
Is seeing the performance on that level. He was acquaintances with Seth Rogen, right? Also from Vancouver. Oh, okay. And actually, he was in a high school improv group with Seth Rogen. They're just 1 year apart in age. He did a degree in business at the University of Victoria. And this is a fact that he plays up in the opening sequence of Nathan For You. He says, I attended one of Canada's best business schools. And they flash a picture of the Canadian flag.
Yeah, his transcript.
And got really good grades. And they show his grades and it's like B plus. C minus.
I think there was an A in there.
There was an A minus in there.
Okay.
But it was like definitely a B average at most.
Yeah.
So he worked in brokerage for a while, but then he just moved to Toronto to give comedy a shot. And so he did the Humber comedy program and he performed stand-up around town. And he had a lot of success like pretty early. So he got a job writing for Canadian Idol. And then he got another job on This Hour Has 22 Minutes in the 2008-2009 season. He wrote for the show and he was also a correspondent who would appear on his own segment. It was called Nathan on Your Side, very close to Nathan For You, where he parodied consumer interest stories. So he was like a consumer interest reporter. Yeah. And his interview style, deadpan, uncomfortable, getting people, playing tricks on people, getting them to do weird stuff. This was already like fully formed. This Hour Has 22 Minutes is filmed in Halifax, and we don't know much about his personal life, really. He doesn't really talk about his personal life at all, but he was married to a Halifax librarian from 2011 to 2014. In 2011, he moved to Hollywood. He got a gig working on the Comedy Central show Important Things with Dimitri Martin. That's a show I remember watching and liking. Then soon after, John Benjamin Has a Van, which was another Comedy Central show. And then in 2013, he launched his own show, Nathan For You, the one I've been talking about, which is a parody of business rescue reality shows. Now, it ran for 4 seasons, 31 episodes. In 2020, Nathan For You ended in 2017. He took a few years off. He seemed to be trying out different stuff. In 2020, he became executive producer for a very interesting HBO show. It's a documentary comedy called How To with John Wilson, and it's based entirely on this comedian John Wilson's personal video footage. He walks around, it's first person video, so you don't see him.
Oh, okay.
You just see where he's walking and pointing his camera. He goes around New York, and the whole show really comes together through editing, and the footage is edited into these funny, sort of sad, philosophical, personal video essays. It's very artsy, and it's very prestige TV, and it's very low budget too, so there wasn't a lot to be lost, I think, doing the show for HBO, and it's had a couple of seasons now, and I've watched it, and it's quite nice. It seemed like that was a way for Nathan Fielder, as the producer of that show, to get in with HBO. So now, on July 15th of this year, he launched The Rehearsal.
So wait, Nathan For You is not HBO, it was...
No, this is a point I want to make here. Yeah, like, so this is one of the major differences between Nathan For You on Comedy Central and The Rehearsal now, is that what he's done is he has moved to prestige television. He's moved from more, I would say, kind of lowbrow at times, populist network show on Comedy Central to a prestige show, which makes different claims, right?
Yes,
and
very
it has
much.
Audience that expects somewhat different things. So I think this is one of The Rehearsal's innovations, is he did bring reality TV to a prestige network. He managed to do that really well. Watching reality TV, you know, what do you expect? I'm not a huge reality TV viewer. But like, I think you're often in there for the spectacle, for pure entertainment. You know, hot bodies, totally manufactured emotional situations, exotic locales. It really is just spectacle. Often.
And people behaving like
badly. Right. Yeah. Now the prestige viewer, however, they expect to be improved by their viewing experience. They want art. They want to learn something when watching a show. And so The Rehearsal does both. It really does. So he manages to put in just straight up jokes. There's tons of laughs. It's often very subtle. It's often done just through a voiceover, a voiceover over incongruous footage, right? So like maybe just showing pictures of the very boring looking pictures of the town in Oregon where they're filming, and it's just like a roadside stand and just like a kind of a dilapidated barn, and he's like, we're here, it's like we're here in beautiful Oregon. It's just like, that is a laugh. It is, he does little things like that, but as well as like really big, like just sight gags, like so much of the show is based on seeing people dressed up like as other people, because they're constantly rehearsing, so there's always this like very funny sight gags of showing the real person and then showing the person playing that person, and so that always gets a lot of laughs. So it's like, it's really working just on a basic comedy level, but it also claims to be showing or revealing something interesting or new or profound about people, or even about Fielder himself. It kind of claims in a way to be a social experiment, so that we're going to learn something about human nature watching this. And so that's where the prestige appeal. I think like what he's doing in the rehearsal is something more profound than Nathan For You, and and also more insidious, because in Nathan For You, he's intervening in people's business lives. In the rehearsal, he's intervening in their personal lives. Yeah. And it's that move from business to person, like something personal, that is really where
the stakes go up,
and it has to become more artful. So the tone has shifted. You know, where Nathan For You would often be mocking, I don't really find this show mocking. I really don't. It's subtler, it's softer. There is critique of the people. He does like get laughs like at their expense, but it is much softer. It's more refined. So maybe you could just tell us about the rehearsal, how it's structured, and its different episodes.
Okay. So there's 6 episodes of the rehearsal.
Yeah.
Nathan Fielder, at the beginning of episode 1, meets with a real man called Cor, who is a teacher and a bar trivia enthusiast. And bar trivia is this guy's hobby. He has a problem in his personal life that he wants help solving. And Nathan's found him on Craigslist after advertising for people who want help with some problem with their personal life. And the guy, his issue is that he has been on the same trivia team for years and years, and he told them that he had a master's degree, when in fact he only has a bachelor's degree. He feels really, really guilty about it, and he wants to come clean, but he's not sure how to do it without alienating himself from his trivia team, which is his main social network. So Nathan tells the guy that he has created a replica of his apartment without his knowledge, and that he's been rehearsing with an actor playing this guy to like get this one interaction just right as they first meet. So that's how we're introduced first to the whole notion of rehearsing.
You're right. They cut to an actor who like looks just like Cor.
Yeah, very similar. And he's acting just like him. He's like taken on his personality and his way of speaking, and Nathan's going through all these different ways that he could introduce the concept to Cor, and like how Cor might react with the help of this actor. And then he tells Cor, this the whole point of this is, we're going to rehearse your interaction with your friend from the trivia team, Trisha, until we get it just right, and then there's nothing that can possibly go wrong. The point of this is, you'll have every possible contingency planned. So whatever she says, you'll have rehearsed it and you'll know what to say next, and there's no way to fail. So then we learn that he's created a replica of the bar where Cor plays trivia as set.
And this is a huge wow moment for the audience.
Yeah.
When we see inside this replica of the bar.
Yeah, it's exactly like the real bar, but it's in this giant warehouse space where he built his replicas. And he has an actor playing Trisha, the friend. Oh, and he goes to these great lengths, like we talked about, to have these things unfold the way he wants. So he manipulates the real Trisha into meeting up with the actor under false circumstances so the actor can learn Trisha's manner. And then the actor shows up and has like gotten it down, like she can talk just like Trisha. And then they go through like rehearsal after rehearsal of how this interaction might go, where Cor is going to reveal his secret. And then ultimately, like, I can't spend too much time discussing everything that happens in the show, but to skip ahead, he does the real interaction. It does not go exactly as planned, But it has a great outcome. He tells Trisha the truth. Trisha takes it really well, and their friendship becomes strengthened by it. And we learn that their friendship has been even more strengthened by it as time went on after that.
So you found this exploitative. You mentioned that when you first watched it, you felt uncomfortable with it. Now, what is it about the show that makes you feel like that episode, the way you described it? What didn't you like about it? What made you feel uncomfortable about
it? Well, I felt like the humor in it was all laughing at the characters. So Cor and Trisha's eccentricities are kind of brought to the fore by having actors play them, and by kind of like having them rehearse over and over. We see their quirks brought into sharp relief, and I feel like a lot of the humor was like the laughs were coming from that in a not too kind way. And same with like even just the fact that Cor was so invested in the bar trivia, not just in his relationships with the rest of the team, but in winning the bar trivia, because that's like a kind of subplot, is that he's not willing to forfeit his chances of winning bar trivia in order to have this intense conversation.
That's another subplot, so he has to figure out a way to get Cor to win this bar trivia.
Yeah.
Because Cor, that would be very bad for his self-esteem in this in this like important moment.
Yeah.
If he lost bar trivia that
night. He's like, Nathan surreptitiously has like Nathan learn the answers to all the questions in advance without knowing that he's doing it, and it's so absurd.
I just found this so surprising.
Yeah, it is like, surprising.
Like at every turn, I was surprised by what Nathan was up to next, what his plans were now. And so there's a real, there's a real delight in that constant surprise. Mm-hmm. I mean, I have to say that the surprises, the machinations, that's what I really enjoyed that in the show. One of the things you're doing when you're watching the show is watching people who have chosen to be on a reality TV show to discuss their personal problems. So does it feel like these people are not fully in control of their lives, maybe? Or does it feel like they're searching in the wrong place for some help? Mm-hmm. Or are they really, would they just really like to be on TV and they're actually fine with what they're doing on TV? Like, they themselves don't have a problem with it. If that's the case, I often wonder, like, well, who am I to say that they shouldn't be doing this?
Sure.
That's often how I feel about it.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I think I agree with that in retrospect. I just know watching it, I felt like I felt uncomfortable. And maybe this was just me. Maybe I'm the jerk here. But I felt uncomfortable seeing the great lengths that that Nathan and Cor were willing to go to in order to have this conversation about something that was like being treated as incredibly consequential when like it shouldn't really have been that consequential, I felt like.
I think a lot of the humor comes from that incongruity between the problem, which is small, and the great lengths that you go to confront it.
Right.
That's one of the major, I mean, I think this is what makes the premise so funny, really. When it comes to the people who are on the show, I mean, I have to say these are people who you would never otherwise see represented on TV, quite frankly.
Yeah.
And at times we may be laughing at their eccentricities or quirks or frailties, but other times you really identify with them. And like seeing him so anxious, seeing Cor so anxious about something that seems like not a big deal, but he's very status conscious.
Yes.
And that's something that a lot of people identify with.
Yes, that's true.
That I can understand that. And, you know, I wouldn't ever trust my representation to a reality show.
Well, that's the thing, is that I think what made me uncomfortable at the Cor of Cor was that he was so vulnerable, and he'd put himself in such a vulnerable position. And at that point, like, I really didn't trust Nathan with other people's vulnerabilities, right? I just felt like, what is he doing? He's just trying to get, like, this person's being so open, so willing to do whatever crazy stuff Nathan suggests. And he's so earnestly committed to, you know, improving his relationship with his friends and to also winning the bar trivia. And he's just so, like his heart was on his sleeve.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I don't feel comfortable with someone's heart being on their sleeve and Nathan Fielder being the person who has that heart and can do what they will with it. And that it's on TV.
Right. And so the question is, well, he has this power. Does he use it inappropriately?
Yeah.
I don't feel like I can't really think very often of times where I thought he did. He makes a few little jokes about him along the way, but none of them seem too mean-spirited. Mm-hmm. They seemed tonally, like, they seem fair. Mm-hmm. I mean, here's the other thing. When people are strange or weird or frail, like, I mean, it is just being honest, partly to show them, to show them.
Yeah.
Like, that is one thing that reality TV or documentary claims to do is, like, well, show reality as it is. I found that kind of refreshing again to see someone like this on TV acting so anxious, being, yeah, insecure or vulnerable. And if I had to, I would find myself more or less defending the rehearsal. Everything is under Nathan's power. He's in control. He's allowed to do everything with people who seem like vulnerable. Mm-hmm. How does he use his power? And I don't feel like he abuses it.
No, and I agree with that. As the show went on, I felt like, oh, okay. Like, I was, and maybe intentionally, led to think this was one kind of show and it's actually another kind of show.
Mm-hmm.
In the second episode, he starts a new rehearsal.
Right, and that takes up the rest of the series.
Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, it continues to the rest of the series.
It's a 5-episode arc, I guess.
Where he meets a 40-year-old woman, Angela, who is thinking about having a child but isn't sure if parenthood is for her. So he sets Angela up in what she has described as her dream house, mm-hmm. where she wants to, you know, her life to be a certain way. She wants a big house. She wants a garden. She wants to spend her time gardening.
She wants to live in Oregon. She wants to live in the countryside in Oregon. Yeah. So they actually go and do this all in the countryside in Oregon.
And they set up this giant set, right? With a garden and with the house. And
It's a real house.
Sure, but I mean, they make time seem to pass by, like, having fake snow when it's supposed to be winter. And she gets to raise a kid.
She's rehearsing Adam. Being a parent.
Yeah, so let me describe it. So she gets to rehearse raising this boy called Adam, who will grow, I think it's 3 years every day. And so the child actors are constantly switched out. So it's like every few hours there's a new Adam. I think it's three years every week.
It's 3 years a week. Is that right?
Three years a week.
So you have a week weekly.
So a few days with each actor.
Yeah.
But because under a certain age, child actors can't work more than a certain number of hours.
4 hours.
The babies have to be switched out every 4 hours. So when her back is turned, you see someone like reach in, take the baby, and put in another baby. So there's like a real...
Again, more funny. That is really funny.
And you also get to see the parents of the child actors kind of back, you know, behind the scenes watching and making sure everything's okay. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of on both levels. You're seeing the experience of the rehearsal, and then you're also seeing the setup of the rehearsal each time. And so that's episode 2, is the setup for that. Then as the series continues, Nathan, as he's continuing with Angela, tries to find her a partner, a male partner, because she's like, I would rather, you know, in real life, have a male partner. So he tries to find a man to rehearse the other partner in the situation. He finds a very, like, eccentric guy, and it does not work out, although at first they seem to connect over their Christian beliefs.
Right. So this is something, like, the way the show mixes, just in its very fabric, is constantly weaving falsity with reality.
Mm-hmm.
Often, you know, you're often on the audience is being tricked too, and it's revealed to you later that this was actually, instead of being a real interaction, this was actually an actor that Nathan set up to do something. So this is a good example where this guy who's like really cool dude, really good looking, like chill, he's a very weird guy in a lot of ways too, as you'll say in a minute. I was convinced that at any moment Nathan would reveal that he was an actor.
Right, but he wasn't.
But he wasn't real. And so again, there's this. That kind of tension is often present in the show. And
you don't know.
And it's interesting. It does keep you engaged.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And he wanted Angela and the guy to connect in real life, like to at least like each other enough that they could imagine, pretend that they're a married couple, right? Like he didn't want it to just be an actor. He wanted it to be someone real who was also rehearsing.
Yeah.
But the guy flees during his first night because he has to wake up so much to every time the baby cries, he has to wake up, and then eventually he gets too tired and he just leaves.
They made a point of wanting to chase him away, I think.
Yeah, they made the baby cry like
every 10 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. And it's a robot baby.
At night, of course, a real baby actor could not be there. Yeah. So they
had a robot baby.
A robot baby, and they could program it to do stuff.
To cry whenever they want. So it's crying all the time, and the guy eventually is just like, I can't take this. And he runs away. So Nathan decides that he will step in and be the father in the rehearsal.
Right. He asks consent. Yes. He's very clear. He's like, is it okay if we do this? Or?
Yes. And Angela agrees to it.
Yeah.
So then the show goes forward. And meanwhile, he also does another rehearsal with another guy who has a dispute about his father's will with his brother. So
there's
other rehearsals happening in the background. And then we also have an episode where we see the acting school that Nathan has set up to train actors to be in the rehearsal.
I believe it's episode 3 where Nathan leaves Oregon. He goes back to LA and he set up his own acting school. And this, for me, this is my favorite episode. It's really interesting because you get to see now actors rehearsing to be...
Rehearsal actors.
Rehearsing to be actors who do rehearsing.
Yeah.
Who are like in the Fielder method, which is all about rehearsing and
they have to meet someone and then get to know them and then imitate them.
And Nathan has this arc where he's wondering if he's a good teacher or not. So he decides, as a way of a method of self-examination, he'll do his own method. He rehearses being one of the students in his own class. So there is an amazing moment where we go from the real classroom, which has 10 or 12 real students. There's just a really amazing moment when they cut to Nathan's rehearsal of his acting school, where he has other actors now playing the roles of the acting students.
Yeah.
With himself now in the role of one of the
another
actors.
Actor playing Nathan.
This is all a way for Nathan to figure out, basically to try to have an empathetic point of view on the experience that these actors are having in his own school, so he can decide if he's a good teacher or not. And it's really funny. And of course, it's just the sight gag of watching the actors being imitated by someone else and seeing Nathan do that too. He puts on a jean jacket and a funny wig, and now he's playing one of the young, hip, cool guys. I think his name's Thomas.
Thomas.
And he's trying to imagine the acting school from Thomas's point of view. And he's realizing things, or at least he's pretending to realize things for the sake of the audience, like, oh, Nathan is actually not a very good teacher. He's very bland, and that's not the most engaging way to teach. What he realizes from Thomas's point of view is that Thomas is an actor and he very much likes being on camera. So when they're filming this, they show Thomas, Nathan as Thomas, looking at the camera and being like, oh, actually, I quite like being on camera. And they show his experience leaving the set and being asked to sign a waiver. And there's it's a very funny moment where it's a very self-reflexive, where Nathan is he looks at his own waiver, the waiver he makes people sign when they participate in the show, and he's like, wow, this is really long. It would take me hours to read all of this. I don't understand any of these legal terms. And he looks around and is like, well, everyone else is signing it, so it must be fine. And then he goes ahead and signs it. And so it's a really wonderful moment where he's pulling back again the curtain on his own production. The show has gotten generally very good reviews. Mm-hmm. There are a few people don't like it, and some grumblings about, is it ethical doing what he's doing? And I feel like one of the reasons people watching the show would think that this is somehow more unethical than, I don't know, any other Hollywood production is only because the show itself
reveals
how its mechanisms work.
Yeah.
So if someone's able to critique the show for being unethical, it's it's only because the show's being honest.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. So as the show goes on, he importantly is playing the father in this rehearsal, and Adam is aging, being played by different actors, and a couple of really bizarre and brilliant things happen. One of them is that Nathan goes away to do another rehearsal, and he's gone for a few weeks. And when he comes back, Adam is now gone from a child to a teenager in his absence.
He's been gone the equivalent of 12 years.
Right. So the kid is, he's playing Adam. Is really, he talks to him, and he's like, I really want you to act the way that you would. if your father was gone for 12 years and then just suddenly came back. And so the kid playing Adam really gets into it, and he's really mad, and he hates his father.
And
right?
he develops a drug problem.
Yeah.
But the kid is learning himself how to play a troubled youth.
Oh, right.
By
hanging out with one.
By hanging out with one of his friends who has a very similar problem with a dad who was gone because he was in jail.
Yeah.
And apparently has sort of a substance abuse problem.
Right.
And so he's like, he's using that in his own performance.
Yeah.
And to me, this is the most poignant. This is episode three. This is the most poignant part of the entire series for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'll describe what happens, which is that the actor playing Adam becomes more and more
troubled.
Adam becomes more and troubled. The actor becomes more and more, empathetic to how someone in this situation would really behave.
Melodramatic.
Yeah, melodramatic, but also hanging out with his real friend. And also, Nathan's pushing him to be more and more, he's talking to him kind of behind the scenes and being like really go for it, know? And so he ends up, there's a scene where Adam overdoses on some kind of drug, and Nathan finds him, and he's screaming and crying. Nathan, what's happening?
Yeah,
and the kid seems to be dead, and Angela, the mom, comes into the room, and she's just horrified, and then meanwhile, we know that Angela in real life has had substance abuse issues, so that's kind of another layer to that.
Yeah.
Then an ambulance comes to take Adam, and when we see the paramedics, one of them, they're actors from his school, including Thomas. So that was a really great touch.
Just amazing.
And then Adam
runs off.
And then as they're loading Adam into the ambulance, he suddenly pops up off the stretcher and runs off. And then there's a scene Nathan's wandering around all night looking for him. And then in the morning he finds him, and Nathan is hanging out with a bunch of other miscreants on a play structure in a park. And he and, Nathan, their eyes meet across the park. And then Adam gets into the slide and slides down it, and at the bottom pops
the younger version of
a 7-year-old.
So,
or a 6-year-old.
They're
going back. They're going to go back and start over.
For the next episode, I think it's the next episode, they're going to start over.
Yeah.
With Nathan now present.
Yes.
As for Adam, for those years that he had missed.
But then another, a brilliant touch at the end of that episode, you see the 6-year-old and run over to Nathan happily, and they walk away hand in hand. And then you see the older actor playing Adam pop back out the top of the slide.
He just got in at the top and didn't slide down.
Yeah. Of course,
that was how they got the shot.
Yeah. And then he's like, are we done?
Yeah.
And so that's a really brilliant line of the episode.
That final sequence of that episode is extremely poignant for a lot of ways. First of all, the mixing of reality and fakery. We know when we're watching it, all of those things that happened, Adam overdosing.
Yeah.
Nathan yelling, oh my God, I don't know what's happening. And he's actually acting like Nathan never never acts outrageous.
Yeah.
But he is there.
Yeah.
And because he's always so deadpan, but there he's screaming. And then Angela's there, who's not an actress.
Yeah.
She is so embroiled in the scene. They show her and she's crying and but she's not an actress.
Yeah.
And you're watching it, and all of this is fake.
Yeah, and that Nathan told the actor to do it. He's not letting him improvise the way he's supposed to.
You know that all of this is fake. However, you're watching it and still moved by it.
That's right.
There's the music, which is always... This is the music behind it, which is always so emotionally impactful.
Right.
What is it saying? Watching it, it was the most moved I felt in the whole series. But you're watching something that they're faking.
Yeah.
But then you think, all art is just people faking stuff, unless it's documentary, it's always fictional.
Yeah.
And so, that moves me to watch it.
Yes.
And it makes you just kind of reflect for a moment, on what humans are like and what we respond to and how actually we have these incredible empathetic possibilities. Where seeing somebody in pain will make you feel feel that along
with
them.
That's right, yeah.
And that's just, I guess it just is a moment where you think, wow, we really are strange. Or that's something really kind of nice about humans, is that we actually feel each other's feelings.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll do it even, we'll respond to it even when we know it's fake.
Right.
So you can just give the appearance of feelings, and we will still, it will work on
us. Like our mirror neurons will fire.
It will work on us. And so that's a really amazing moment for many, many reasons. And then there's also another poignancy there, I think, if you are especially a parent, and I read a review of that scene in particular, a review where they wrote about that scene in particular, and mentioned just as a parent, it really tugs your heartstrings. Like the way that, like the rehearsal presents the possibility of, I messed up, Nathan's messed up, he's going to go back in time and try it again. And how that is like a parent's absolute fantasy about mistakes they may make.
Totally.
As parents. And so it's an extremely poignant scene. And I think it's like the peak achievement of the series.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that. That's a really beautiful scene. And you're right. It's working on all those levels at once.
Yeah.
And again, like breaking the fourth wall with that last Adam coming out the top of the slide again as the actor now. But like this show's always breaking the fourth wall, and then it's like there's another fourth wall.
There's another wall behind
it. And another wall and another wall. And ultimately, like, we don't know where the walls end. Yeah, so in the last couple of episodes, and I mean, there's been lots of other quirky, hilarious, awesome, brilliant stuff happening in the meantime.
Yeah.
But
too many details.
Yeah.
Too many tricks. Too many surprises. And we wouldn't want to ruin them all.
Yeah. There's a whole sequence about Nathan's parents coming to visit, and they notice, like, Angela's very committed to Christianity, raising Adam Christian, and Nathan's Jewish, and his parents are like, shouldn't you get to raise him Jewish as well?
Yes, yeah, so if you're taking this seriously, wouldn't you want to raise your kid Jewish?
Right, and then that leads to all sorts of conflict that, like, we don't have to go into in great detail.
No, but Nathan is here purposefully drawing a line in the sand, and you can tell he's purposefully provoking. In retrospect, he's provoking conflict for the sake of. But here's the thing: you might say that he's purposely provoking conflict with Angela, who's a born again Christian.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like it's kind of fair that he does do this because Angela's response suggests like kind of anti-Semitic feelings.
Oh yeah,
so,
big time.
So if you're like, well,
not just feeling, she says anti-Semitic
things. She says anti-Semitic things, like how she wouldn't want her kid to be even raised around with Jewish ideas as equal to Christian ones or whatever. She says something along those lines, and so it does seem like pretty anti-Semitic. And so if you're like watching a show going, well, he's like purposely provoking and confronting Angela for the sake of the show, it's like, yeah, but it's on a fair point, quite frankly.
Yeah, it is a fair point. And then when he brings in that Hebrew teacher to tutor the kid, and then he's like, you start to think of her as the voice of reason, and then she ends up also having quite fanatical beliefs about Zionism.
Oh yes, yeah, she's like an extreme Zionist, and she's kind of scary too. You're like, well, there's no good guys here.
Yeah, everyone's got their blind spots and their like almost their ideology that's driving them that they can't see around. Mm-hmm. But then like the really kind of pivotal important thing that happens towards the end of the show is that one of the child actors who played Adam as a 6-year-old becomes the actor himself becomes very emotionally attached to Nathan and refuses to stop calling him daddy and like wants to see him again and says he loves him.
He was
and
too young.
He just
young.
Doesn't understand. He doesn't have a father in real life.
Yeah.
And he basically imprints on Nathan and he doesn't understand that he was acting. He doesn't understand the distinction between the day that he spent being like, or the couple of days that he spent being Nathan's son. And you see some footage from those days, and it did look like a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And then he can't really let go of that. He doesn't understand that it was fictional and that it was a game of sorts.
Yeah.
He doesn't understand. He doesn't want to understand.
Yeah.
He doesn't want it to be the case. And so then we see Nathan trying to figure out what went wrong by having multiple rehearsals where he reenacts what went on between him and that child actor, trying to figure out what he could have done differently to prevent that emotional attachment from happening. And he spends time with the mother and the child trying to kind of explain, help him understand, so, like, we're friends, but I'm not your father.
Right, and he gets, so what he, yeah, his process, of course, he uses his process again, is to get, he's going to himself embody, trying to understand what it is to be a parent and what you're supposed to do as a parent. He decides he's going to play the role of the mother. And he gets one of the other child actors, a little older one, who's actually, they show him to be a very good actor. Yes. They get him to play the other little boy.
Yeah.
And they are like mother and son together. Yes. And there's that's really how the series ends, with like a
scene between them.
A few scenes between them, but yeah. One in particular, where Nathan is trying to reason out. He delivers a monologue that he's clearly prepared, mm-hmm. but that would be from the point of view of the mother.
To the child.
To the child.
And he's saying, you know, sometimes it's good for life to have surprises. Even when we get hurt, we like grow and learn from
it. Maybe it was a mistake for me to let you do this.
Yeah.
Maybe Nathan, speaking in this third person now, maybe he doesn't really know what he's doing.
Yeah.
He didn't know how he was affecting you.
Yeah, and like this is a very confusing experience for a child, and I shouldn't have made you do it. And I mean, it's interesting because this part of the show, I mean, you talked about that scene that's like very affecting with the older Adam turning back into the younger Adam. And I think that this last scene was also not just the scene, but the whole sequence with the young child becoming attached to him is incredibly heart-wrenching, partly because it's presented as real in the show, and you just feel so bad for this kid. It's just so heart-wrenching that he wants a father so badly, and he's so attached to Nathan, even though we're reassured kind of as an audience that he's okay at the end. Like, you're still left thinking, and I think you're supposed to be left thinking, you know, is it really okay for children this young
To be on TV.
And I mean, it's funny what you said before about the only reason that we see that people accuse this show of being unethical is because it's honest. Yeah. I mean, there's child actors. We're always watching shows with child actors.
Tons of kids TV on TV.
Shows.
Yeah.
Movies. And we've all read memoirs and we know that, and read stories, like we know that child actors are often traumatized by their experiences.
Yeah.
And carry that into adulthood, and it is very confusing and exploitative. But like, somehow we're willing to sort of shrug our shoulders and watch anyway and not feel that bad, except when the show is actually saying, look what happened, look what we're doing here.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, he's really shining a light on something that's happening all around us all the time.
It is. And that scene, that interaction with the problem with child actor in the last episode has been the source of some people saying, oh, I don't know how I feel about this. But it's like, do you ever watch any other children on
TV? Well, you're not supposed to feel good about it. That's the point.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not supposed to feel good about it. Yeah. So I was very happy to have watched the rehearsal. It was a real delight. And I've heard there's a second season coming because it has been a hit. So do you have any like closing thoughts on the show?
I think the show is ingenious. Like, even though, I mean, it made me uncomfortable in the first episode. It made me uncomfortable. I think the fact that I felt so uncomfortable watching that first episode speaks to how well it was doing what it was trying to do. And all the times that one feels uncomfortable in that show, you should feel uncomfortable. That's what the show is for. It's funny, and it's like ingeniously structured, and it's also, it's also shining a light on some real ethical quandaries, or even just unethical practices that we'd prefer not to look at too closely, right?
Yeah.
And about how television shows are made and watched, and how we just all shrug our shoulders and not to mention also like the really interesting questions about how human empathy works, and like how storytelling works, and how much you need to be able to suspend your disbelief, and like what's involved in being able to do that for a story to have the emotional impact that you wanted to have, to consider it to be good storytelling. So I think it's a great show. I think it's really good, and I can't wait to see the next season.
I guess that's it for this episode then, Naomi. Thanks for watching and chatting about the rehearsal with me.
Thank you. And spoiler alert, this isn't really Aaron. This is an actor playing Aaron. And this is all a rehearsal for the real Sweater Weather.
Oh, no. It's true, though, isn't it? Like, as when we're here talking with each other, I mean, it's us, but it's not us.
Mm-hmm. And you're going to edit it?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
All of the nudity, the crass jokes, the stuffed animals that we play with.
Yeah. The fights that we have.
The honking of horns in the back and on the street outside.
Yeah. Well, Aaron,
Well, Naomi?
It's all an illusion. If you are, Aaron, which
folks,
I doubt.
We're an illusion, but so are you. And we'll see you next time.